We've all been there. Your team's feedback is scattered across emails, chats, and sticky notes. It's a mess. But PDF Spaces in Adobe Acrobat gives you one collaborative workspace to streamline every file and comment. Learn more at adobe.com/dothatwithacrobat.
Hello and welcome to the special podcast series, The Experience, in partnership with Chase for Business. I'm your host, Abigail Bassett with Inc. Custom Studio. Today, I'm joined by Ben Walter, the CEO of Chase for Business, and Sheila Winston, Vice President and Senior Business Consultant at Chase. We're going to talk about some of the opportunities and challenges facing small business owners, both here in Seattle and across the country. First up, my conversation with Ben Walter. Welcome, Ben.
Thanks for having me, Abigail.
So let's talk a little bit about where small business owners' heads are at.
This is an interesting time for small, for business in general, for business owners in general. Sentiment among small business owners for years before the election was riding along at a historically low level, despite financial results that were actually pretty positive. Now, it's unusual we see that level of disconnect, and that completely reversed after the election. We saw a near all-time, and in fact, it might have been a one-quarter all-time jump in sentiment into the beginning of the year, and that has since started to come off, given all the noise that we've heard. Most of that is related to uncertainty. Businesses hate it. And we certainly have policy uncertainty at the moment. But what we're not seeing, again, we haven't seen a dramatic change in either direction on the fundamentals. Cash balances are still strong. Revenues, expenses still seem to be holding a margin in small businesses that seem reasonable. And so a lot of this just reflects, for lack of a better way to put it, the vibe that's out there. And we can talk about whether it's a vibe session or a vibe boom or where we are. Those things go up and down. Am I worried that some of this uncertainty will start to weigh down? Yes. But when you talk to small business owners in particular, you find a lot of variation. I mean, even amongst manufacturers where you would think the tariffs are biting the hardest, you find a lot of sort of, I don't know what this means. One business owner said to me, well, I import a lot of Asian steel and I'm worried about the cost of that, but that applies to everything. But equally, I compete with a lot of subsidized Asian manufacturers and that makes life hard for me. So I'm not sure what I really think or where this is going to go. I'm a little worried, but I'm sort of trusting in the process and we'll see. So some people are giving it sort of faith. Other people are immediately finding huge spikes to their costs and having to pivot hard. It's an unstable time, but small businesses, the good news for them is the smaller you are, the more nimble you are. So big businesses are aircraft carriers. Small businesses are speedboats.
Right. And they can turn a lot faster, obviously. That sounds like there are opportunities for small business owners, particularly in this space. What is giving them hope right now?
There's a few things. One is demand is still holding up and unemployment is still low. And we love to talk about whether GDP went up or down. And what we talk about even more is whether the stock market went up or down. Most small business owners do not manage their life by GDP and stock market volatility, right? That's how the pundits on CNBC and the traders in the pits talk. There's no more pits, but you know what I mean. But that's how they talk. Regular people look at, what do my customers want? Are they still spending money? Are they placing orders? And there we have seen a surprising amount of resilience, particularly in the job market. You know, private sector jobs grew by almost 500,000. Net jobs grew by 200,000 in the last month. It depends on your point of view. You can either call it Liberation Day or Liquidation Day, depending on, on your point of view on the market. I borrowed that, but
that's
I thought it was good.
I like it.
And that's for you to decide. But that was April 2nd. So we had a full month of all that noise in the media. And most of that stuff has been pretty resilient. Now, I will say, Abigail, it varies by business, by individual business, and by sector, by geography. So there's ups and downs and puts and takes in that. But overall, both demand and employment have been pretty resilient. In fact, if anything, there's been some demand pull forward as people try to get ahead of the tariffs.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, a lot of consumers are stocking up. A lot of people in small business are thinking about, okay, where is my supply chain going to be constrained? What do I have to rethink in terms of sourcing, you know, here in the States? Is there an opportunity for companies specifically here in Seattle, specifically here in the US, that maybe we didn't have previously?
The big one is that if we are going to have reshoring at a high rate. And there's a whole bunch of arguments about whether that will or won't happen. I get that. But I think we're going to have some. I mean, it's pretty inevitable that we're going to have some. If for no other reason, we were already sort of having the conversation about some after COVID, because it, regardless of your political views, it did expose some vulnerabilities in our supply chain, in our global supply chain, that I think left us out to dry during the pandemic. So I think people were already opening their eyes to that anyway. What we are finding here is some of the upstream inputs to a manufacturing renaissance need to be rebuilt. built. So it's not just that we don't have someone who can, I'll pick something random, make screws or make, it's that we don't have people who can make the machining tools
right.
that make screws. And so I think there's going to be a lot of upstream opportunity for small businesses to be involved in a renaissance of building the things that make the things that make the things that we consume, right? You have to go all the way back upstream. And we've done that. We've done a good job of that in energy, where we're a world leader. We've done a good job of that in agriculture, where we're a world leader. We've done a less good job of that in some electronics manufacturing, battery manufacturing, pharmaceutical manufacturing. So I think there are going to be plenty of opportunities upstream as some of that inevitably gets reshored. Here in Seattle, obviously it's a tech-led economy. That goes without saying. If some of these trade deals come off, I do think that it's going to open up some tech export opportunities. We have two biggest exports as a country. It's agricultural products and it's our technology.
Yep.
You know, there have been some trade barriers to the export of our technology and some IP infringements around the world that I think if those things can get resolved, will be an opportunity for these healthy technology startup ecosystems to flourish because they do have global markets.
And looking ahead, what do you think the future of the economy is going to look like in, say, 6 to 10 months?
If I knew the answer to that, I would quit my job and go start a macro hedge fund and make a lot more money.
Yep, absolutely.
So the honest answer is I don't know. And anybody who tells you they know is selling something. So our job as advisors to small businesses and to businesses in general is to help them be prepared for any outcome. And so my advice for people listening, my advice for people who follow the economy is that, you know, you need to plan for the middle sort of 80% of the bell curve, but you need to know what you would do if you hit the 10% fat tail on either end.
Right.
And that's the reality. So I don't know where the economy is headed. I think we could have a recession. We could have a soft landing. We could have a hard landing. We don't know. For all our flaws and as a country, and we have plenty, I do think one of the things we've proven time and again is that the flexibility, both with respect to capital allocation and labor, is so dynamic in America that we can respond to even the fat tails. And so I remain a bull in the long term, and I think whatever the economy throws at us, we will find a way through.
You mentioned that small business owners have kind of been in this vibe session, right? They've been feeling
good and bad.
Negative.
Yeah.
Good and bad. They were feeling largely negative before the election. They were positive after the election, and now they've sort of settled back down. What do you think is really informing that?
There's two things that are really driving it. And I'm going to be really plain with you. One of them is political. So when I meet with people who supported President Trump, they tend to be more optimistic. When I meet with people who didn't support President Trump, they tend to be less optimistic. So some of it is just like politics has become such a team sport that it carries through to your view of everything. I'd love to say that's not true, but it's partially true. I think the other is just the speed and the veracity of the media cycle. This is what's fascinating. And I've been doing small business for 15 years, and I've seen this effect get stronger and stronger and stronger. There's always a gap between how I think I'm doing and how I think the world out there is doing. And I always think I'm doing a little better than the world. And that part of that goes with the optimism of being a small, right? If you're not an inherent optimist, you'd never go start a small business. So that's part of it. So you'd expect to see some spread. What we have seen over the years as the news cycle has changed, as social media has proliferated, is we see that that spread varies way more. So I think I'm doing great. I think the world's doing terrible. And then the news cycle gets positive. I think I'm doing great and the world's doing great. So that gap narrows. And then it turns around and the world tapers off, but I still think I'm doing okay. And so people are internalizing, I think, a lot of the sort of narrative of what's going on out there, but they're making their decisions on what they see in front of their faces,
right.
Which is customer demand, which is inflation still pesky, which is I'm still trying to hire people, and so I'm going to hold on like hell to the people that I have, and that's part of what's keeping the labor market resilient. So I think there's more of a disconnect ever between what you see in polls and pundits and online media and what people will tell you when they talk about their own direct business prospects, which are informed by the facts on the ground.
Right. That makes great sense. Well, I want to thank you so much. I really appreciate the time. I can't tell you how much great insight you offered, especially about sort of that rubber banding effect that happens with perception amongst small business owners.
Watching that change has been really interesting over the years, because obviously, given what I do, I follow both the macro and the micro aggressively. Like, what are people saying en masse and what are they saying individually? And watching the sort of the departure of those two things widen over the years has been an interesting phenomenon.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I'm joined by Sheila Winston, VP and Senior Consultant at Chase. We're going to talk about some of the key financial tools that women entrepreneurs can take advantage of to go from startup to success in this changing business environment. Sheila, welcome.
Thank you so much, Abigail. It's always a wonderful time to be here.
Yeah, thank you. I am really excited to be in Seattle, and I want to get a little context.
Okay.
You know, I read this stat recently that here in Seattle, nearly half of all self-employed business owners are women. Why do you think that is?
Because Seattle is such a wonderful, rounded area. We have a lot of big corporations. We're known for like Microsoft, we have Amazon, and we also have a lot when it comes to Starbucks. So all of those are pretty large corporations. So it's very wonderful put together as far as the whole atmosphere. In addition to the large businesses, they're also a good place for startups. For startups, they have at least 20% globally for startups in the area. And Seattle celebrates and likes to recognize women. That's kind of their focus. I would say as a senior business consultant, for my book of business, about 50% of the participants are actually women-owned businesses.
Wow.
So I think women are to a point where they're very tenacious and they want to really start opening up their own businesses and be seen to the point where they know that they can finally come to the forefront to make it work.
Tell me a little bit about the program that you offer and how it helps support female entrepreneurs.
It's called Chase Coaching for Impact, and that is a wonderful program. And what we do is we help businesses to be able to scale and grow to the next level. We help them to understand the aspects of how to make their business successful when it comes to business planning, when it comes to understanding the marketing piece, when it comes to understanding navigating cash flow in addition to what they need to have a loan. So there's a lot of different aspects that we give them as far as guidance and foundations, because what we find is that a lot of times businesses, even though they've been in existence, don't have the basic fundamentals. So when they come to a point in their business where it's a little bit different, they don't know what to do. Like, for example, a couple of years ago, we all know we had the pandemic.
Right.
And in the pandemic, they had to restructure their business and they had to kind of think some things through. So the Coaching for Impact really helps them to have that guidance to be able to sustain in case something happens in the area that is unforeseen.
Right. And so it's really a tool that they can use to be able to ensure that they are weathering good times and bad.
Absolutely. Yes, it's guidance, because a lot of times business owners feel like they're out there by themselves and they don't have the proper knowledge or tools to sustain the business. So unfortunately, some of them get frustrated, they give up. And after 2 years, they kind of get to a point where they're kind of flatlined. They don't know what to do as far as moving forward. So the Coaching for Impact program actually focuses on those types of businesses, the ones that have been in existence for at least 2 years that need to have some type of guidance and direction. And Abigail, what I find is that in coaching with these different participants in the program, giving them hope, helping them to see things from a different lens is very, very successful, because it's one of those things where, again, they don't feel like they're by themselves, and having a sounding board and have strategy meetings is very, very important to be able to sustain.
You work with a lot of women in this space, right, through this program. What do you find that women entrepreneurs sort of struggle with when it comes to starting their own small business? What are some common things that they might not actually know about starting their own business?
Well, a lot of times I think women-owned businesses, they need to have the understanding of what is going to take to properly run the business. They have to understand the basic principles and fundamentals and have the knowledge to be able to grow, and also confidence, right? A lot of times I think they lack the confidence that they need to be able to move forward, so they don't always have a lot of esteem. So I would definitely say that's one of the things. But also, in addition, they have maybe gender biases that they've had to overcome, of different things that they've tried to overcome and feel like they are kind of challenged because they're not able to move forward.
Is there a distinct difference between a female entrepreneur and a male entrepreneur in terms of like how they approach business or the confidence you mentioned, right?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like men may be a little bit more confident going into business and thinking, I can make it, I can do it myself, I'm, you know, bootstrapping it. Whereas women tend to approach something from a perspective of, I need to know more information about this before I jump in.
Right, right.
Have you seen that in your experience?
I definitely have seen that in the experience. And to be honest with you, from that standpoint, I kind of like really mentoring women because they do want to know what it's going to take for them to be successful. They are very much more tuned into the program. They will ask more questions. I'll make sure that they can do the homework assignments. Not to say that the men won't. The men will also do it, but they do it from more of a confident lens like you just shared. Whereas the women will want to dig a little bit more. I think by nature, we as women women like to make sure things are put together just right. We're very detail oriented, and it definitely shows in the women
absolutely.
As far as the ones I coach.
We've all been there. Your team's feedback is scattered across emails, chats, and sticky notes. It's a mess. But PDF Spaces in Adobe Acrobat gives you one collaborative workspace to streamline every file and comment. So if you need six departments to finally agree on a proposal, do that with Acrobat. Need to turn a mountain of feedback into one plan of action? Do that with Acrobat. Want to stop searching for files and finally get everyone on the same page? Do that with Acrobat. Learn more at adobe.com/dothatwithacrobat.
When it comes to self-funding, right? Mm-hmm. Self-funding is one of the most common ways that entrepreneurs get started. What considerations should founders know about self-funding that could either pose challenges or opportunities for them as they move forward?
Well, self-funding is actually, there's the pros and the cons when it comes to self-funding, okay? So self-funding means that you're going to fund the business entirely by yourself. So in doing that, that will help you to be able to have more control over the business and not be in debt. That's the thing that's really, really nice. The con, though, the negative is by you self-funding is you don't have additional resources. Everything's on you. So it's a situation where the business may take longer to grow because it's self-funded versus if they were to get a loan or a line of credit.
Right.
One of the things I will say, if you're going to self-fund the business, make sure you know the fundamentals. Start putting money aside for savings and also start building your credit, because those are two tools that you're going to need to be able to move forward in your business. As your business grows, you're going to want to create different things with credit in order for your business to get to the next level. So starting on that early, which oftentimes will be what the bank looks at initially, since you don't have any business credit established, is very key and important.
Do you have a rule of thumb for how much people should kind of keep to the side to save when you're self-funding, or does it depend on the business?
I think it depends on the business. Reason why I say that, because the rule of thumb, in answer to your question, would be probably at least 30 to 60 days worth of putting money aside. However, you know, certain businesses may not have that type of money to put aside, but even if you, you know, have at least 2 to 3 weeks, the reason why I say that is because they took a survey, and as far as the pandemic, and we call it cash buffer days. And cash buffer days actually is what is needed to sustain the business if something was to happen that's unforeseen. Well, the pandemic was unforeseen. And when they did the survey, they found out that businesses did not even have 2 weeks of cash buffer days.
So they were that close to sort of the edge.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's why you had a lot of businesses that closed, a lot of businesses that had to furlough their employees, a lot of businesses that had to have the PPP loans, so on and so forth. So having that extra, whatever you can put aside, is very, very key, because it will help if anything was to happen.
Have you seen that change following the pandemic? Like, did we learn our lessons as entrepreneurs to save more money, or is that something that we sort of already forgotten?
I would say in the beginning, there was a lot of people focused on that. But over time, I think like anything else, people kind of get comfortable. In the Coaching for Impact program, that's one of the things I do emphasize and make sure that we do have those cash buffer days set aside.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
They really help to sustain.
Well, and given the uncertainty that we're facing in the economy right now, sort of nobody knows what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone 6 months from now.
Agreed.
Do you think that entrepreneurs, especially women entrepreneurs, should have a larger buffer at all? Or is that still a good 30 to 60 day?
I think the statistics are the same, because I will say this much. Women businesses, a lot of times, because they are so detailed, will have that money put aside. But as far as them not putting it aside, I don't see that as much. I think, again, because they're so much more detail oriented, they will put the money aside.
And how should women entrepreneurs think about repaying themselves if they are self-funding, if they are thinking about how to have this cushion, how to build their business? What about that consideration of, like, I've loaned myself this money to start this business. How do I recoup that?
It's very important, Abigail, for the women to recoup their money, because a lot of times they're putting a lot of money out and they don't necessarily get it back, or they don't see it come back. So they can do it in the form of maybe taking a draw, or possibly if they loan the business money, they can even put a loan if they pay themselves back from the business when they make the revenues.
Oh, wow.
That's okay. Two ways they can pay themselves back. But as far as the different types of entities, what I really recommend is that they get together with their CPA and ask their advice on how the best way would be for them to get paid back. Because, again, it's one of those things where you want to do it correctly and you want to make sure that it is in line for tax purposes as well.
Right. And you mentioned that one of the things that particularly female entrepreneurs or women entrepreneurs don't consider is building that business credit. How important is that?
Business credit is huge. That's all I can say. I'm a firm believer in business credit. Oh my goodness. The reason why I say that is because there's so many businesses that don't think they're going to ever need to use credit, but then when they do need to use credit, they don't have the things in place. And so getting that credit initially done as far as you working on it is very, very key. I believe that all business owners should at least hopefully be able to get a business credit card. It's the easiest vehicle to get. It's just going to be based on your personal credit oftentimes, and it's a good way to start building that business credit because, you know, when you go for that larger vehicle as far as a larger line of credit or either a loan, having that credit card will be able to have the lender look at the history to make sure that you're paying them on time and that you have, you know, good habits when it comes to lending.
And is that same length of time, that 2 years of business banking credit, appropriate? If you were, say, going to go for a line of credit or go for a larger loan, do you guys like to see like 2 years of a business credit card?
Well, to be honest with you, oftentimes businesses, when they first start, they can actually apply for that credit card if they got good credit because it's based at that time more on their debt ratios and their personal credit. After they are in business for a couple of years, that's when we're going to look at more of the line of credit or a loan because, again, that history has already been built. Mm-hmm. But you can sometimes get that credit card sooner if you've got strong credit.
And it's sort of a dynamic between strong credit, having a strong relationship with a business banker. Let's talk a little bit about that relationship and why it matters so much, especially for women entrepreneurs looking to start their business or looking to grow their business even.
Yes, absolutely. Well, first of all, I will say this. Business bankers, we're here to help. Having a business banker is very, very key. Chase has over 7 million businesses that we actually have in our portfolio, if not more. We recommend that they are with some type of either a consultant or business banker. Reason why, as I shared, we're here to help guide them and help to manage their different types of situations. A lot of times when they're out there by themselves, they're not managed, they'll make a lot of mistakes when it comes to taxes, when it comes to not understanding to put money aside, when it comes to not understanding even how to do a marketing plan. But having that guidance is very, very key. So the way that our program works is I work alongside with business bankers, initially with businesses that have been in existence for 2 years.
Okay.
And I'll get them all ready in order to be able to get with a business banker if they're looking for a loan or a line of credit. What we do is oftentimes talk about the different aspects as far as financials that are going to be needed, tax returns, the importance of ratios, and just different things, and as we shared before, credit, that they're going to need in order to get that loan. And then oftentimes, I will go ahead and refer them to a business banker, and they'll become managed, and then the relationship will continue to be positive for them.
And how frequently should small business owners be sort of touching base with their business banker? What's that relationship kind of look like over the lifetime of a small business?
Well, the business banker oftentimes will have a portfolio to be able to manage and maintain that relationship. So they oftentimes will reach out to the customer, and then the customer in turn will now have the confidence reach back out to them because they are their trusted advisor. And that's even with my particular job. Like, for example, even though after 4 months I graduate people from my book of business, because Coach for Impact is a program where it lasts for 4 months and then you graduate, because I was their consultant and gave them such good advice, they still call me up and say, Sheila, I have this scenario. Matter of fact, on the way driving here this morning, I was on the phone with one of my former mentees.
Wow.
And finally had to tell him, okay, I know I'm in traffic. I got this big event. I invited them to come, but it's a good feeling. I've also gone to many events before through Chase and seen former mentees, and they say, oh, there's Sheila, my mentor. So we take pictures. So it's the same thing with the business banker, right?
Right.
Establishing that trust, establishing that relationship. And in the customer's mind, once you get them to that level, you're always that person.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and as far as I know, you've been in banking now for 20 years. And you know, you've worked with a lot of female founders. What's the best piece of advice that you give to a mentee who calls you up and says, I need some help or I need to touch base?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing that I want to let them know is that even though they may have not no longer be in the program, the relationship is still in effect, right? Mm-hmm. I will set up a meeting with them. I will find out their issue. I will still get them with a business banker. The main thing that I do with them is find out what the issue is and what's possibly causing the issue.
Right.
Again, before I put them in front of the banker, I try my best to position them for success. And so that when they do get with a banker, they will have pretty much everything that the banker is going to ask for.
Right. And I just want to circle back, you know, tell me a little bit about why Seattle is so friendly for women entrepreneurs.
Seattle's friendly with women entrepreneurs because Seattle's a very diverse area. We have a lot of different groups, a lot of large companies such as Starbucks, Microsoft, and Amazon. And then we also have a lot of startup companies as well. So it's just one of those things where I think because Seattle is pretty much open to the large and the smaller businesses, women feel more comfortable to be able to come here and feel like they're going to be fair.
Right. And supported, I think, really.
Exactly.
Right? Because you have this diversity of businesses.
Yes.
And this diversity of large and small, all
Absolutely.
Kinds of different types of people from different backgrounds.
Absolutely. Yes. And to be honest with you, like I shared, my book of business, there's at least, I'd say half, if not 75% are women owned.
Wow. So Sheila, if someone wants to get in touch with you or a business consultant in their city, how do they find you guys?
We have a website, www.chase.com/businesscoaching-for-impact. And I'll be on the website, and there's other senior business consultants that are in a lot of cities. So if you look at the Seattle, you see myself and also my partner, Walter Acuna. And then also we are on LinkedIn, and I can also reach out to them and give them my email address if they would like me to do that.
Oh, perfect. So if I'm in New York or in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. should I work with my local business banker, or should I try to reach out to you and connect and then sort of filter through the system?
Yes, because you are in New York, we do have senior business consultants in New York. It's probably better for you to work with them because of the time difference. So I would recommend that. Of course, I don't want to turn away business. Anybody else that wants to work, that's fine. But it's one of those things where if you are in a city where there are consultants, it's probably to your benefit to work with them. Now, the North, I can talk about what my region is. The Northwest region is Seattle, Colorado, Arizona, and then also a whole bunch in California. Like I said, they're all over. The best thing is look up that website and then look for a city and the names that come under that city.
Well, Sheila, I really appreciate the time. This has been fantastic and I've learned so much. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you, Abigail. I appreciate it.
That's all for this episode. Thanks for joining us. I'm Abigail Bassett for Inc. Custom Studio. This episode was produced by Blake Odom and edited by Avery Miles.